This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. As you guys have come to find out that I've been doing these solo maybe the last year and a half or so, it's been kind of fun because I've been really fortunate to have some really amazing guests on the show over the last year, and it's been fun to hear feedback from all of you guys out in the audience as to who you guys are liking to hear. I also have really enjoyed you guys continuing to pipe different recommendations. So if any of you guys have got some intros that you guys want us to have somebody on the show, please feel free to shoot me off a note and shoot me off an email or tag me up on Twitter. But today, not too different than the last number of shows, we are joined by a special guest. And the cool part about this guest is that this guest, similar to some of our most recent guests, also operated and grew restaurants for quite some time. And so we are joined by Rod Ariola. Yeah. Sorry. I knew I was going to screw that up. Rod, how's it going today, man?
Great, Jeremy. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I didn't want to say your name wrong. I tell any of these longtime listeners know that I've screwed up some people pretty bad on the podcast, and I want to be respectful of people's names. With me having two first names as a first and last name, a lot of times I get called Julian on a regular basis, and so
a bad name. Very cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, Rod, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell them a little bit about your background, both in the restaurant industry and kind of where. We'll wait to talk about where you're at today, but why don't you give them a little bit of your history and where you came from?
Sure, no problem. So I guess we'll start way back. I'm actually from Seattle, Washington. Grew up there and went to school, University of Washington, and I was an IT guy actually when I first came out of college. I worked in software, and as you guys know, probably there's a lot of software companies in that area. So I did that first, and I did that for about 8 years before actually getting the entrepreneurial bug. And I always wanted to start my own business. And I finally took the leap and did that in 2003 and started a restaurant concept called Teriyaki Madness. It's a fresh Asian grill concept where we still serve like teriyaki chicken bowls with veggies and noodles and that sort of thing. So we started that in 2003. In Las Vegas, which was just booming at the time. One of the reasons why we decided to start in Vegas, because it was growing so fast and there was a lot of opportunity there. The other reason I chose Vegas was I knew if we could make it in Vegas, this concept would make it anywhere around the world. And, a lot of people coming into Vegas, as you guys know, all the time from all different parts of the country. And even people that move there are transient and come in from all over the country. So I wanted to use it as a test bed really for the concept. And we started our own restaurant there about May of 2003. Once we opened the doors, it was a huge, huge hit, like I thought it would be, because I love teriyaki myself. And people started asking us, hey, are you guys starting a franchise at all? Are you guys thinking about growing? And of course, I always wanted to grow the concept from the beginning. And we decided that we wanted to grow via franchising instead of privately, so we started franchising just a year and a half later after doing all the franchising work and all that stuff. And we started selling locally just in the Vegas area, and we sold about 6 or 7 locations and then kind of stopped for a while just to get our bearings, and then and supported those franchisees in Las Vegas. And then in about 2013, 14, decided to start expanding nationally. And that's when we started, kind of growing. And by the 2017, when I was looking to exit, cause I wanted a new challenge, it sold about 100 franchise locations across the nation. So I got bought out and sold it, at that time. And that's kind of my background. Hope that answers your question. Yeah.
That's awesome. So there's a lot of questions that came up. First and foremost, how in the world from Washington to Vegas? That must have been a huge culture shock. Culture shock, weather shock, all of the above. How was that on your system in general?
Oh, it was definitely a shock. I mean, growing up in Seattle, I grew up actually in Kirkland, Washington, which is east side of Seattle there. And if you've heard of Kirkland Signature, that's where Costco was started. So Kirkland Signature has a bunch of that stuff. So I grew up with the first Costco right by my high school. And so anyways, just a side note. So the weather was definitely depressing. And so that was one of the reasons why my wife and I, and we had a young baby at the time, we decided wanted a change in weather, and we definitely got it.
Yes. So you went from Seattle, where it's, you know, gray and gloomy, on a regular basis to, you know, one of the hottest parts of the country in Las Vegas.
Exactly.
No, go for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Seattle, don't get me wrong. Seattle is the most beautiful place about 3 months out of the year. And then 9 months it's depressing. So it's paradise between June and about October. It's amazing, but those other months are really tough. So we went to Vegas. Our first summer there in 2003, record heat. So we moved in May, and so that whole summer we had like the first 2 months, it was like 119 to 120 degrees for like 3-4 weeks straight. And my wife and I were going, "What the heck did we get into ourselves into?" But anyway,
I'm sure your wife's like, "Can we go back to Seattle, please?"
Well, for a second, but we actually enjoyed our time in Vegas. It was really fun. You know, I mean, we had a lot of family and friends visit all the time. As you know, everyone comes there at some point or another. And so we definitely had more visitors there than we ever had anywhere else. So
very cool.
That was fun.
Very cool. So you shared a little bit of the story of building the Teriyaki Madness brand and being able to launch, you know, I think you said 6 franchise stores, and then you guys decided to stop. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I've been doing this restaurant thing for a really long time, and I see some people that do it quite well and then they don't really get restarted. Some that do it well and stop because either the brand isn't right or the product isn't right or the supply chain isn't right or the, you know, whatever those reasons are. So I'd love to hear a little bit of insight on why you stopped and then what do you think culturally and product wise really helped get you guys back restarted? Because again, I've seen quite a few people that you know, the horse leaves the barn and they don't ever catch it. And then the brand dies 3 or 4 years later because they haven't figured out how to consolidate it. And then I've seen people that do exactly what you did and never get restarted. And so there's always this battle and this risk of, I'm going to grow and I'm going to grow fast and everything's going to go really well. But if you don't make the franchisees successful, you can sell as many franchisees as you want, but it doesn't end up netting you what you want in the long term. If you don't protect the brand, you don't protect the product, you don't protect the guest service, you know, to make sure that they can be successful as a franchisor and as a franchisee.
Exactly. You hit it right on the head. So yeah, after, you know, opening our first, you know, 5 franchisee locations, we understood that in order for us to really grow, you know, outside of Vegas, we needed to make sure that those franchisees were successful. And really it was, so I started with my brother and my cousin, who are also co-founders. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had, we all had the processes and systems in place that would make all of our franchisees successful. We had done it on a, you know, on a 1-2-3 store level, and we did it ourselves, but we had to make sure that it could translate anywhere across the country. And that included, you know, creating, you know, the operations manuals and the training and the support that was needed. And we wanted to make sure that, that we had those in place before expanding more. I mean, we could have definitely grown as fast as anyone, you know, wanted to buy a franchise, right? So at that point, I even knew that wasn't sustainable with the team that we had. And so pump the brakes due to that. Really, it's the team and the support and all that stuff. And then, you know, expanding on a national level, that's hard too, because you want to make sure you have the distribution. You want to make sure, you know, we had Sysco as our national distributor or even our local distributor. But we had some things that we could only get in Las Vegas, some proprietary Asian, you know, spices and things like that, like noodles and egg rolls, things like that that weren't available yet. And we had to set those things up before trying to expand nationally. So definitely, you know, we wanted to make sure that all the franchisees, and I mean all of them, were profitable and successful. And that was the game changer. I think that's a game changer in any business, but for franchising, I think you need to prove that, more than one franchisee, more than one location, would be successful and profitable. And then after that, you know, when we did go to the national level, it was important for us to prove it outside of Vegas as well, that it could be successful and profitable as well. Not saying that we didn't have our problems, you know, like any brand had lots of challenges.
Oh no, it's amazing how many people we've seen come, and you know, there's an ongoing joke. If I had a nickel for every time somebody said they'd be a 100 store chain, I retired 10 years ago. Because they start with one store and it's really successful because they either got the right location or they have the right rent or they have the right, you know, they're right next to a college and their product fits that need. And then they try and go to the second and third store and they just fail miserably. And 6 months later, they've been sinking all of the profits from the one store into the others and they don't end up making it. So, fully know exactly where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess one of the other questions I have for you is teriyaki madness is not a unique concept. While I've eaten at least the one store that's close to my house, I've eaten at the one store that's close to my house, and it's a pretty cool, you know, it's a pretty cool profile and pretty good food profile. It's not unique. I mean, there's even back to Yoshinoya, rice bowls with some level of protein and some level of, you know, and I'm not putting your guys' quality of the food on that same level, but why go into what I would consider to be a relatively crowded space of a rice bowl with a protein or a vegetable bowl with a protein? Kind of what led you down that path as it relates to competition? Because I think there's some lessons because you guys were able to make it through, here in Southern California, that, you know, there's two or three concepts that have grown pretty significantly similar to what you guys did with Teriyaki Madness. But why steer towards that, I guess the red ocean of a rice bowl type concept where there are a multitude of other competitors in that same area?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first and foremost, I had a passion for it. I loved teriyaki when I was growing up. So in Seattle, there's literally when I was growing up, there's probably a teriyaki madness on just about every, oh, not a teriyaki, I'm sorry, a teriyaki joint on every corner. And so I grew up eating it and I loved it. I love the concept of, you know, really good tasting meat served with rice. It's really simple, right? So I felt like there wasn't anyone like that on a national level. And that's one of the reasons why we decided to go to Las Vegas is because Seattle was already saturated. I didn't want to do it in Seattle because there's just too many of them. So that's one reason. The other reason I think that, I really wanted to pursue it is because I believe what we did with Teriyaki Madness is a little different. Obviously the name says a lot, right? It's fun. It's kind of crazy, but it's also, that's the brand I wanted to create. I wanted to create a fun, funny, passionate brand around that. And I think, you know, we've done I did a good job, I think, of that. And then they continue to do that, with their advertising and branding. And then the quality, you know, like you hit on the head too. So we felt like we had the best teriyaki concept and the best food to offer. So one of the values that we had was we offered way more protein than any of our competitors. So when I was in charge, we made sure that there was at least 8 to 10 ounces of meat with the bowl or with the plate. And that's a big differentiator. The way that we cooked and made sure that all of the food was fresh was another one. And then the ingredients as well. We used quality ingredients in our food. And so that, along with the service that we provided, was always top of mind for me. And I think that was one of the reasons. Those are all the reasons why I think Teriyaki Madness has been successful. The other thing that I just remembered was that I wanted to Americanize really the Asian this Asian concept, right? And make it not as scary to those, especially like in the Midwest or, you know, people that didn't really know about Asian food so much. I wanted them to think this food was really approachable. It's simple, it's easy to understand. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been very successful as well. It's just not, it's not sushi, you know, it's not raw uh-huh. fish that we're serving, which is great too, because I mean, I love sushi, but I just think that this attracts a lot more people. I think that's one of the reasons why it's been successful.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I would say about the brand, and I know that no one could have predicted it, is it's easy to produce. It's relatively fast, mm-hmm. and it travels relatively well.
Exactly.
Whether it's for takeout or it's third party delivery or it's, you know, dining in, the if you get the right packaging, the food can travel well. And I know we'll get into kind of some of your predictions about where things are coming out of COVID and all of those kind of things. But that's one of the things I love. And again, I'm privileged enough to live in Southern California where we've got, you know, Flame Broiler and Waba Grill and Teriyaki Madness and so many of these brands. I mean, Yoshinoya's corporate office is 20 minutes north of us. And those other two are also, one's 20 minutes east of us and the other one's 30 minutes north of us. And so very familiar with those three brands just because they're both all three Southern California based and been pretty privileged. And to your point, you can tell the difference from a service perspective, from a cleanliness perspective, from a, you know, even when you walk into your guys' stores versus some of the other brands, you can tell that somebody's taken a shortcut on even cleaning, you know, cleaning and those kind of things, you know. So, I digress because I want to get into kind of where you're at now and how you got to where you are. And so the story goes that as part of your guys' expansion, you guys found some people to help you on that journey. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, that's correct.
So tell me a little bit about how that happened. How did you find the partner that you guys worked with to expand nationally? And where did that lead your, you know, Rod particularly, and your career path as you've engaged since you've sold off Teriyaki Madness?
Yeah. So back in 2012, around that time, I was at the iFranchise convention. The IFA convention in Las Vegas, of all places. So another reason why Vegas is great. There's a lot of conventions there. And so I was attending the IFA as a franchisor and was at a dinner. And I remember meeting a few people from this company called Raintree. And I was like, oh, what's this? And so I got to know these guys, Mike Edwards and Brent Dowling, are the owners right now. So I met those guys back then and they explained to me, you know, what they did, and they help franchisors in franchise sales, you know, basically development and franchise sales. They do franchise sales consulting and brand marketing, that sort of thing. And so I engaged them to help us with our franchise sales, because that's a whole nother business, as you probably know. So
absolutely.
I did it well on a local level, right, with franchisees that were customers. But then to take it to the next level on a national level, I needed some help. And so we hired them on to help us with that. And they helped us grow tremendously from 2012 to 2017. Like I said, we had, I think, 7 or 8 franchisees at that point. And then by the time I sold the business, we had over 100 franchises sold in 2017. So they took us to the next level, and I'll always be very grateful for what they did. So that at a high level, that's how we met with Raintree. And so just in the last basically year, I've stayed really, really good friends with them. Actually, Mike and Brent I consider them one of my best friends. And they asked me to join the Raintree actually, like a few months ago, asked if I would help them with their franchise sales consulting. I decided to say yes, and I love it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So before I get too far away from it, you talked about this franchise conference that you happen to be going to. What drove you to go to that, and what did you find to be effective about going to that franchise conference? Because again, I think some of our listeners out there have a concept or have a brand, and they realize that they either don't want to be on the road, they don't want to expand beyond their local geography, but want to get their product out into the market. What made you guys go to the International Franchise Conference, and what did you find there? Talk to us a little bit. Give us a play-by-play about the why and the what behind that franchise conference for any of those listeners that may be in a place where they're intrigued and interested in going there. And what did you find, and how, you know, besides meeting these now two best friends, what else did you find there, and why did you go, and would you go back, or would you recommend another friend that was creating a brand to go to a conference like that once conferences are opened back up, you know, post COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, if you've been to the IFA, it's a big event with all the biggest players in franchising, from, you know, all the biggest franchisors, to vendors, marketing people, salespeople, and then all the way down to emerging brands like we were. So, you know, we were an emerging brand at that point, and very young, and we were there to learn. I was there to learn. And so they have, you know, not only do they have a bunch of booths and things like that, but they also have seminars, right? Free seminars that you go to learn how to be a better franchisor, how to put together an FDD better, you know, franchise disclosure document better. They have attorneys to help consult. And then they have these networking events, right? They have happy hours where you're able to rub shoulders with, you know, the biggest players in franchising, and dinners and that sort of thing. And then it's fun. I mean, there's a lot of fun things that you can do as well. But for me, it was more to find somebody like Raintree and to find other partners and vendors that you wouldn't be able to find elsewhere in another venue or another event. And so I would definitely recommend it. At least go one time and see. Uh-huh. You know, I went to several. I went to Palm Springs. I remember the first one I went to was in Palm Springs, and it was a great time there. Vegas a couple times. And so it's just a great event, and very professional. And I would definitely recommend it for anyone in franchising. Not even if you're, you know, working for another franchisor and you're just, you know, a typical franchise sales guy. Yeah, it's just a great event that I think that does wonders for networking, you know, and finding other people that you can work with. So I have a lot of colleagues that I've met through the IFA conventions and stuff, and through the IFA, and I really love it. And I haven't gone in a few years because I wanted to take a break. And that's one of the reasons I sold the business as well. So, but I plan on going back, you know, maybe this year when they started again. So,
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think it's pretty interesting that you say that, because I've heard both sides of the equation, but I've also seen a lot of people try and figure out the franchise thing by themselves, or they've got a guy that's a franchisee for a brand and they try and copy his franchise agreement and make it their own. And ultimately it doesn't net you the results that you guys were able to experience at Teriyaki prior to your departure, because at the end of the day, that's what people like Raintree do, is just they help walk franchisors that have a product and have a brand through the process of not just the agreements, but land selection and demographics of the area, of, you know, of does this even work? Where does it need to fit in the hierarchy of a strip mall, or does this need to be freestanding? There's so many different things that go into making a successful restaurant, and really organizations like who you're working for now, that's really their role, is to help with those things. So why don't you talk me through a little bit about a little bit about what you guys are, what you're doing now, and what makes you excited to, I guess, to come to work each day. You know, you went from being a, you know, franchisor who was growing your own business and getting to call the shots and, you know, doing your own deal, to now finding other people that are like Rahad and trying to figure out how to help them grow their brand. Talk to me a little bit about what that looks like in your daily life, and what made you take the plunge to go try and find other people like yourself out in the space to be able to help them grow.
Yeah, you know, that's really what I miss the most is working on the franchise sales side. I love hosting. I love going out. I love talking about a brand and having a passion for it. So when I was engaged by Raintree, I asked them, hey, you know, what brands would I be working on? And so they told me about some of the brands that I would be working on. So one of them was Voodoo Brewing Company, and it's a It's a brewery that's outside of, basically it's Meadville, Pennsylvania, near Erie, Pennsylvania. And they started franchising just a couple of years ago. And they have, I believe, 10 locations now in that area. And that was very exciting to me because I love craft beer. So they basically beer their own, you know, they brew their own beer. And they created this franchise where the model is they distribute all of the beer to your location so you don't have to brew. And so they have award-winning brew and liquid, and they have an amazing concept, including food. And, you know, one of the reasons why I could get behind it. Another concept that they told me about that was coming on board is Tin Drum Asian Cafe, which kind of is my wheelhouse. They're a new concept out of Atlanta, Georgia, and they have, I think, like 6 or 7 locations in Atlanta, and they're looking to expand nationally. So, you know, they're where I was, 13 years ago. And so they have great concept, great revenue numbers, all that. But now they just need help expanding on a national level. And that excites me. So, and then I have another brand called Next Staff, which is a staffing company, which is amazing too. And it's a totally different industry, but I get excited about that too, because, those, it's growing like gangbusters, their numbers are great. And so, so those are the reasons why, I really, really was excited about joining, where all the brands, the possibility of other brands coming on board too. And I want to talk about this new brand that's coming on board that we're onboarding right now, but I think I got to keep it a secret, but it's going to be a game changer for us. And I think for franchising as well. So I'll just leave it at that.
Love that. And I want to make sure that people heard you say that it's not just, you know, Raintree doesn't just work, you know, with brands that are restaurants. It sounds like you guys span the gamut of different brands that that do more than just restaurants.
Yep.
Out in that space. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. We've got, Footprint Floors, which is a flooring company. We've got Dog Training Elite and Houndstown, which is a dog-based franchises. So yeah, we do it all. I mean, if you need help and the brand, and we can get behind the brand, we'll definitely we'd love to work with you.
I love that. So Rod, I'd like to pivot a little bit again and talk a little bit about what have you seen happen and change over the last 16 months. We're recording this in late May of 2021, all knowing that anybody in the restaurant industry and anybody listening to this has lived through a pretty painful and in some cases a really successful last 16 or 17 months. What are some learnings that you've seen? You were out of the space. You're now back into spending some time with restaurateurs on a daily basis. Where have you seen things pivot? Where have you seen things change? And where do you see them going as we come out of this pandemic and we start to see a new normal, for lack of a better term? Sure. Just because it's, even if it's not the same, same type of things, sales volumes might look the same, but they might be split up differently, those kind of things. So what have you seen change, and what have you seen pivot over the last 14 to 16 months as we've been going through this pandemic?
Yeah, and to echo that, it has been a brutal, brutal time. It's been tough for everybody, especially hospitality and restaurants, right? But there is a huge light at the end of the tunnel. I believe there's going to be a huge renaissance coming in the next, probably in the next 6 to 12 months, probably in the next 5 years. Just people wanting to get out and experience other people again, right? And where better to do that than at a restaurant? Whether it's Teriyaki Madness or Voodoo Brewery, where you can get beer and some food and hang out with your family. But I definitely see a huge renaissance coming, and we're getting prepared for that. We're already seeing that with the interest in the number of prospects and leads that we get at Raintree. It's been tremendous. And then, obviously, there's been a lot of things that came out of COVID, some positive things. The restaurants that survived, the restaurants that strived, were actual restaurants where you could actually pick up food or get them delivered. And Teriyaki Madness was one of those restaurants that really thrived during this downturn. And even other restaurants pivoted, full service restaurants had to pivot to do that delivery pickup, you know, Uber Eats and all those things were huge. And I think that's going to continue because of the convenience and all that. But I do believe it's not just going to be delivery. I don't think it's only going to be pickup. I think people are going to want to go out and really experience the restaurants in person when everything's lifted all over the country. You already see that. Gosh, I go out in Denver and they just lifted the mask rule because of the CDC. And I went out last Friday night to the Rhino District, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but there's a bunch of bars and restaurants and all that. And they were packed, just absolutely packed. So you already see that, you know, people really want to go out and experience restaurants in person. And so, the COVID has been tough and, you know, we've learned a lot from it. I think, you know, technology, you know, the use of technology and social media has been huge during COVID, right? So I think that's going to continue to happen, you know, Facebook and Instagram and those sorts of things, but also the delivery apps that have come out. I think that's going to continue to happen as well.
Well, and I think even, I'll throw something at you and I'd love your opinion on it. I think that as you're working with different brands, I think while they may work, you know, I mean, I think of brands like, I'm just thinking of something that might work really well in a high density area like New York or Chicago, where, you know, making sure that the product can travel, yeah, making sure the product has good packaging, making sure that you design even into your restaurant an area for this takeout stuff. Even if you're a full service restaurant that expects to get 80 to 90% of your revenue through dine in, you have to be ready to pivot and have to be ready to fulfill the needs of those people that want to do third party delivery and that want to manage their guest experience through some other mechanism other than kind of a traditional dining experience. You've got to make sure that you consider that as you're going into designing and opening new restaurants today. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, yeah, from the pickup area in a restaurant and the logistics of designing the restaurants around that, for sure. Absolutely. Cause that's not going away. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And I think you've just got to consider it as you're opening new restaurants. Does the product, you know, and as you're evaluating in the franchise groups, like you said, you know, the Teriyaki Madness worked well because it was a great product. It traveled well. Even in this day and age, I think you would have done well. I mean, we were talking at pre-show about kind of the guys at Chipotle, and they've done fine through the pandemic because they had a digital first presence. They drove so many people to their own app rather than using the third-party apps, so they maintained some level of the profit. If they had the need for delivery, they could, you know, parse it out to those delivery drivers, but their food is good quality, travels well. They're able to engage with the guests in a meaningful way. And again, regardless of your environment, you know, counter service, table service, a hybrid, fast casual, you need to make sure you consider those things as time goes on.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So I have one last burning question that I would love to ask you, Rod, and it's really related to your siblings that you started the business with and the family connection. Uh-huh. How was that? I happen to work in a family business. Anybody that knows me on the on the side of the podcast knows I work in a family business, and
yeah,
there's lots of fun and lots of challenges. And as I'm sure you were growing, I'm sure there was lots of fights, like it was when you were back in grade school or whatever. And then I'm sure as you guys got a little bit older and grew through some of these things, how was that, both positive and negative? And even how was it exiting the business with your siblings? And has it been a positive experience for everybody? Are people still struggling with the decision? Those kind of things. And again, answer as much or as little as you're willing to. I don't necessarily need to put you on the spot and show up at Thanksgiving dinner and they're like, oh, Rod's a jerk, man. He called me out on that podcast.
No. That's a great question. And that people ask me that all the time because it is challenging working with family, regardless if it's your brother, your cousin, or your wife. Because I actually have another business with my wife. It's called Kid Create Studio. It's another franchise that she runs, but I'm also, you know, part of. But it's hard. I mean, the family dynamics are hard because you have to be able to separate business and the family dynamics. And that's often hard to do, right? So we struggled with that. I'm going to be 100% honest. It was a struggle throughout, and it still is a struggle to this day. If I was going to do it all over again, I don't know if I would do it with my family, to be honest with you, because it is hard. And so it took its toll on us. And that is one thing I do regret a lot is the challenges and the issues that came out of running a business as a family. So I'll just leave it there.
Okay. I'll let you off the hook. I'm not going to go Oprah style on you.
I will say I don't recommend it.
Got ya. Yeah. And I would echo some of those same things. I mean, there's been some tough things. My father and I have worked together for over 20 years, and there's lots of fantastic things that I feel really privileged. And then there's times that I'm sure he wants to wring my neck, or I want to wring his neck. And
sure.
But it's been good. It's been good overall. And but it is challenging. And the big thing that you got to make sure of is that Thanksgiving dinner doesn't taste bad because of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And I think I just want to say that we're all successful because of it. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, the success that's come out of it has been huge. So overall, it's been great, but it is very challenging. So
wonderful. Well, thanks for sharing. I know I put you on the spot and I didn't prep you for any of that, but I couldn't let the call go by. I couldn't let our recording go by without asking, because I was like, oh, I wonder how that family dynamic was, because you get a fast growing business and it's tough.
Yeah,
everybody's got to be aligned, and oftentimes you get two or more people in the room, there's a disagreement brewing. That's for darn sure, huh?
Yep, exactly.
So very cool. What would you suggest if people were excited about Raintree, excited to learn a little bit more about how you could help their business? How do they connect with you guys? How do they engage? What makes the most sense for them to get in touch with you or one of your colleagues to be able to help their brand out?
Yeah, actually, that's great. Yeah, so you can go to the website. It's raintreesales.com, and you can learn more about what we do. You can also email. There's a contact form on there, but you can also email me at rod@raintreesales.com as well. And I'd be happy to, you know, start the discussion of how we can help in any way. So those are the best ways, I think, to engage. But I would definitely love it if I could.
I love it. And I really appreciate you taking time to be on the podcast with us. To our longtime listeners, guys, I know that you guys have hundreds, millions of different opportunities. There's a new podcast coming out every day. So I love that you guys still hang out with us each and every time we post one of these. If you haven't already done so, please go subscribe to the podcast, because it helps with our listenership. And while you're out there online subscribing, go share this podcast with your friends and family so that we can get more listeners. Also, one last thing, if you haven't already done so, go subscribe to our once a month newsletter. It gives you just a once a month, we don't ever sell your email, consolidated list of the podcast and the blog posts that we put out there, so that we can continue to deliver more and more content out there to you guys. And lastly, as I said at the beginning, if you guys have anybody that you guys think would make sense to be on the podcast, it's always great to hear success stories like what Rod's done and all of the other past guests. It's just been so much fun to hear about those things. So Rod, thank you so much for your time, and to our listeners, make it a great day.
My pleasure, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.